Inside Northwestern podcast, version 4 here, Gordon Voigt, with my friends Kevin Trahan, Chris Johnson, and the newest member, Luke. Luke, would you like to introduce yourself for us?
Hi, I'm Luke Zrodolski. I'm a freshman in Medill from Kalamazoo, Michigan.
All right. So Derek Jeter, guys, is getting weaved back into this conversation. We had...
We talked about that a long time ago. Something. Sorry, that was bad.
All right, so after a three-week absence?
Two-week absence.
I'm
better now.
I just missed you guys so much. We've got Kevin back from broken ankle, sprained ankle. What was the final?
Sprained ankle.
Sprained ankle, okay.
I'm still in a walking boot, but I'm off crutches, so I'm good.
And he did get a mention on national television. We'd like to talk about your debut on ESPN2.
Yeah, I saw Sean Farnham in the media room, and I didn't know who he was. But then apparently he's like, oh, look, you're on the team. Ha ha, I get it, because you're injured. I was like, yeah. And then he said something about that on TV, apparently. And there's an article about Sean Farnham on the Big Lead today, and they also talked about that moment. That was in their lead of the article. So I feel really special. I should injure myself more often on TV.
Hey, well, Kevin did injure himself playing basketball. So, I mean, besides for the injury, I think the question on all of our minds is Kevin Trahan a stretch three? Is he a four who likes to bang on the low post?
Was surprised I played basketball because he's like, what happened to you? And I said, oh, I hurt myself in basketball. And he's like, at practice, just watching? I was like, no, I play sports recreationally. I don't just cover them. And I don't think he thought I was offended because he seemed, sort of seemed like he's like, I know. Like, we have an interview. I'm like, dude, it's okay.
He thought you meant like 2K12 or something like that.
I don't know.
All right. Well, we're back. That's the moral of the story here. Excited to be back. Let's talk about that OSU game first. This is a team that Northwestern, for whatever reason, has played incredibly close, especially at Welsh Ryan Arena. The number was, in the past three games in Evanston, it was decided by a total of 6 points, I want to say, guys. 6 points, three games. This has been a crazy, crazy series for whatever reason. Anyway, Northwestern, of course, drops that game 63-53. Let's start off with Kevin, of course, our Granderson in this lineup here. Who impressed you most in that game?
In the Ohio State game? I think it was Kale. I think it was Kale and Ola. I like both of them just because, one, that's the best. Well, the best Kale's played all year, and the second best was in the second half against Ohio State last time. So he just needs to play Ohio State all the time to play well. And also Ola, just because, I mean, he's still slow on defense. That's his problem. Against like a guy like Thomas, who's big but not tall and can move, he struggled a lot. But when you put Ola against Amir Williams, Ola was actually the better player. And he even put some post moves on Thomas, which I think was impressive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's good for Northwestern. I think that those two, the rest of this year is about developing the freshmen. And the performance from those two guys, it's not going to be like they turned the corner. There's going to be ups and downs still. But to see that Ola can do that, they haven't had a center who can do that in a long time. So seeing that he can do that kind of thing against Amir Williams, against Deshaun Thomas, that's impressive, and I think that's really big going forward.
Yeah, and the four turnovers, obviously that's something you want to cut down on.
He's a good passer, though. He's a very good passer.
Exactly.
You would not expect that. Looking
at him. He's good. In fact, I don't know if you saw the little tidbit in the game notes, but he leads the nation in assists per game for people over 7 feet.
Huh? There you go.
I think you can find a category for anybody like that. If you're the scrappiest beat writer that's over 6'2 and plays pickup basketball, I think you're Kevin Trahan there. So, anyway, though, so obviously he's developing a lot as a passer. Chris, what was one positive you took away from that game?
The one positive I took from that game was that Thad Matta didn't explode while screaming at Evan Ravenel after a timeout. I don't know. That was kind of the biggest national story from this game was when I think it was after Evan Ravenel kind of he was dogging in on a couple of possessions, and Thad Matta was worried about his effort, so he kind of just laid into him, and his face turned bright red. And then in the post game press conference, when he tried to explain himself, he said he was worried about what kind of pizza Evan Ravenel wanted for the ride home, and I'm not sure that was necessarily the case.
I think apparently Ravenel dropped an F-bomb on the court, like right in front of the ref, and so that might have been part of the reason that Matta was angry. It was like right before that.
Whatever the reason, it was quite the display. But as for the game, I really liked what I saw from Kale, especially in the second half. I think he finished with 9 rebounds, and he was just, I've never seen him play with so much energy and so much like assertiveness, and he was knocking down threes. He was actually even, even active on the defensive end. It was probably the best I've seen him play all year, I would say. And if he can keep doing that, over the last two games and have that lead into a bigger development next year, he could be a really good, probably, I don't think he'll start next year. He might, but he could be a nice sixth man, a nice Marco Tullio type off the bench. So it was good to see him do that.
Now the moment we've all been waiting for, Luke's debut comment. Luke, what was one thing that impressed you about Northwestern?
Yeah, I really liked the way that Kale played in the second half with his 9 rebounds. That was really impressive to me, specifically because when he came in, people were talking about how he's a one-dimensional player, how we're only looking to see him shoot from the outside. But in the second half, you saw him drive to the bucket. You saw him fight for offensive rebounds. And he was a major factor as to why Northwestern matched Ohio State in rebounds, which they haven't done with any team during the entire Big Ten schedule this year. They've been out-rebounded every single game.
Yeah, and, you know, there was a couple times where he came down to the ball, you know, got blocked midair, and obviously there's some of those mistakes where he's been forcing the ball. But I think that you can almost write that off as well as Sobolewski's 5-for-13 night, because I think in the context of a normal offense, when there are enough playmakers where they don't have to force shots like that, I think they're smart enough players where those kinds of mistakes wouldn't happen. Now, maybe that's me being overly optimistic, but I think that if Sobolewski's got, you know, Jaren Sina on the side and maybe a healthy, you know, Swap and Drew Crawford on the wing too, I don't think he's going to force all those shots. Do you guys agree with that?
Well, yeah, I agree with that, because most of the time when Sobolewski ends up forcing shots is when the offense is really stagnant. They're just flipping it around along the outside, and Sobolewski says, oh, I've got to take it upon myself to try and get a shot up before the shot clock runs out. And oftentimes he has a hard time doing that because he's not built like that as a point guard, and no one else on the floor is helping the drive to the bucket at all either, so he's got to take it upon himself.
And something else there too, I think Demps, you know, played a lot smarter in this game.
4-for-10, yeah, 14 points, team high.
He still shoots too much. He still shoots at the beginning of the shot clock when he shouldn't, and he still doesn't play defense very well. But he's gotten smarter about his shots. He's gotten more confident, which is good, because he's always going to shoot it a lot. That's just going to happen. But at least he's confident. At least he's hitting the shots. At least they're going in now, right? So I think I think that was also the three freshmen. The freshmen were the best players in that game. I think that's a major takeaway. I guess Hearn was pretty good too, but I think that Kale, Owa, and Demps are the ones who impressed me the most.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've talked about Demps' shot selection in every single podcast thus far. One thing that I really would love to see him is being able to affect the game when he's away from the ball. Zero assists.
He doesn't do that. Yeah.
Zero assists, right? In 36 minutes. Now, I'm pretty sure I would have had 3 to 4 assists in 36 minutes out there. So I would love to see him develop some patience, find passing lanes. I mean, Alex Ola has done a great job in his first year. I think Demps, with 1-plus years in the system, should start being able to find those. So I think that's one thing that I would look for him to improve on going into next year.
Yeah, but I just don't think Demps is that kind of player. Like, I don't think that's part of his DNA. He doesn't pass the ball. It's just not what he does. He catches and shoots. Like, I guess some guys just aren't wired that way. And like,
I mean, that's not an excuse, though.
No, I guess. But, like, I mean, you see it in practice. You see it in the games. He gets the ball. He's either, you know, passing it back out to the perimeter level, like not towards the basket, or just he's putting it up. Like, he's doing one of two things. And
6 yards in a cloud of dust. That's his MO.
And the other thing is that on the defensive end, he's pretty lost, like, almost all the time. Like you watch, like, Aaron Kraft and Lenzel Smith were just working the ball around, and he was just hopeless. Like, he was flailing his arms like he didn't really know what he was doing. But I think that's enough Trey Demps pitching for now.
Let the record show I'm very highly pro Trey Demps. You guys know that.
Yeah, I mean, he's like a nice spark plug.
Oh, he's great.
He can score.
Yeah.
He's infamous for scoring in garbage time. We know he can do that.
Gennaro Pargo style. No, that's, Bulls fans know what I'm talking about. All right, guys, let's talk about this upcoming game. Senior Day on Thursday, Penn State comes to town. Obviously, it's a Nittany Lions team that is severely, severely lacking in talent. I think Pat Chambers will get them on the mend eventually. This year is definitely not that year, though. How much, given that Northwestern is in this skid, their longest skid since 2008, how much have they fallen, or rather, how much has it become a factor of Northwestern and Penn State being on the same level? Has Northwestern fallen that far?
I don't think they have. One thing is Penn State has still been terrible. Like, they beat Michigan, which is great because they shot the lights out, but they haven't done that all year. And then the next game, it took them 11 minutes to score a single point. So clearly they didn't turn it around or anything, you know. And they've had a few nice games. They played pretty well against Illinois. They played pretty well against Iowa. Almost beat those teams. No, Nebraska. Almost beat Illinois. Sorry. It was Penn State played pretty well against Iowa. They almost beat them. But it's because they shot really well in that game, and they were hitting, like, really deep threes that, you know, you're not normally going to hit. And for some reason, they had a few games. There was, like, Michigan and Iowa were in a few games of each other, and they just randomly started hitting those shots. But it's not a good shooting team. So the only way they're going to be Northwestern is if Neubel and Jermaine Marshall can hit their threes. And, I mean, odds are that's not going to happen. So, I mean, against Nebraska against Northwestern randomly got hot earlier this year. So maybe it'll happen, but I really don't see it. People are saying, oh, Penn State's going to be favored. That's BS. Penn State's not going to be favored. Northwestern's still a better team. As we saw, Northwestern can play with Ohio State on a given night. They sort of are putting things together with the lineup that they have. Penn State got lucky for one game. They're not a good shooting team, and they don't have a front court, meaning they're not very good at basketball. So I don't see how you could say they could be. They can win if they hit those outside shots.
Right.
But it's not likely they're going to hit those shots.
Yeah, you know, I even like Pat Chambers at 5'8 on the low block for Penn State. I mean, they're that thin. What's the name of that player that they had when they won the NIT? They beat Baylor in the final. Was it Jamel Cornley? Was that his name? What was his name?
Were we thinking, wait, when was this at?
Penn State, this is back in 2009.
Was that Taylor Battle?
No, not Taylor Battle. This is back pre Ed DeChellis Renaissance. Anyway. Neither here nor there. Let's talk about this senior class. What is their legacy after this game? And, I mean, how do we assess them? I know, everybody's kind of been feeding us this. Oh, this is a very accomplished senior class. For football and basketball, I mean, that's kind of been the consistent message. Football seems, though, to obviously have taken the next step. Given that basketball has not taken that next step, what is the legacy of this senior class?
Well, I think it's one of major improvement. Obviously, people look at these past couple of years as saying, oh, they have taken us so close to the tournament, but they haven't gotten us there. So we look on them with a bit of frustration. But before these guys got here, we weren't even in a position to – I mean, Northwestern wasn't even in a position to get into the tournament. So the way that Reggie Hearn, his story from coming from a walk-on and becoming a starter full-time and the energy that he's brought to the team, just – the way that they've brought the team up from nothing to where they are now is really impressive in my mind.
You got to keep in mind, I mean, you got to count last year too. Crawford is a part of this class. So, I mean, that's someone else you have to take into account. And how he and Hearn played last year, people always look at Sherman, and Sherman's a great player. But without Crawford and Hearn last year, I mean, they were not a very good team either. Those guys brought things that Sherman couldn't bring because, you know, the positions they played. So, no, I agree with you. I mean, yeah, it's not Northwestern's best class, but it's – they definitely did a lot of things that won't be – this record isn't indicative of what they've done.
Right. I mean, they've gotten – the last 2 years, they've gotten close to the NCAA tournament. And I guess if you're a Northwestern basketball fan, that's something that you hang your hat on at this point. But, no, I just it's been fun to watch both Hearn and Mark Tullio just kind of grow with these guys. And especially Hearn, Luke, you mentioned, he was a walk-on and –
has there been a player like him in the past decade that has come from that to becoming the team's primary? I mean, I really cannot think of a single player that has made that much ground in one career.
Yeah, the one, I think I had this discussion, it might have been with you, Kevin. The only player I can think of that's made more improvement over his 4 years in the Big Ten is Victor Oladipo at Indiana.
Yeah.
And, like, he started out as, like a defensive energy guy, and now he's like a National Player of the Year candidate.
He's still a three-star recruit, though. I mean, from a good program to math.
Right. And Hearn was a walk-on, and now he's a legit, like...
It's amazing.
He scores double figures every night.
Try to find him on Rivals. He's not there.
Yeah, he's a great defender.
How is that possible?
The funniest thing...
How is that possible?
Yeah, the funniest thing that happened this year was when Butler came to play Northwestern, and some reporter from Fort Wayne actually asked... Butler coach Brad Stevens if he regretted not recruiting Reggie Hearn, which it was kind of funny, but, you know, in a sense, it speaks to just how important Hearn has become for this team and how good just his development in general and just how, his career. It's been remarkable to watch.
Said to Tanner about that too, by the way. That was when Hearn dropped like 26 on him. It was like his career high or whatever. It's like, do you regret not recruiting Reggie Hearn? He's like, well, I don't know. I mean, no one else recruited Reggie. Hell, Northwestern didn't recruit Reggie.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, like, what is he supposed to do? I don't know.
All right. So what is Alex Marcusilio's legacy? And again, we're not trying to get personal here, but from a purely just a development standpoint, do you think he's happy with how his career has played out?
I mean, he hasn't really developed. Like, he's been the same player the entire time, which is a good, like, outside threat. Uh-huh. He's actually deceptively tall. Like, you see him on the court, he looks small. He's, like, taller.
Yeah.
He's a pretty tall guy. He's only 6'3". But, you know, I mean, I think he, I don't know, he is what he is. He played on, like, the Great Britain Junior National Team or something like that. I mean, like, I don't know. You couldn't ever expect him to be a star in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And he's...
Right, no, I'm saying that. I'm just saying, what is his legacy?
He's stayed the same as...
Stopgap.
His legacy is he's the guy who hit the shot in the Ohio State.
Exactly, and it's on those commercials.
And Northwestern tries to make it look like they won that
exactly,
game.
I know.
Yeah, because they lost that game, even though he hit
they
that three.
They did lose that.
And then they show people rushing the court from the Michigan State game. Like, there are plenty of good moments from the Michigan State game. Why are you using one from the game you lost?
I remember vividly. I was walking down Lincoln Avenue in Champaign, refreshing my phone every 3 seconds on a score tracker, keeping up with that game. Okay, guys, second segment in the books. Let's talk about spring practice. We've got this arguably the most important offseason in the past 10 years for this program. Kevin and Chris, you guys have both visited practice recently. I've been very interested to hear what you've seen so far, what kind of vibe you're getting. I haven't gotten a chance to get out to practice yet. What's one thing that's jumped out to you early on in the spring schedule?
Well, one thing that's important is the offensive line. That's the area where they have to replace the most people. They have three guys gone, and one of the players who's returning, Jack Konopka, is switching over to left tackle, at least for now. Problem is that Konopka and Paul Jorgensen and Matt Frazier, who are all three could potentially be starters, are all out for practice, so there's not that much you can see. But one thing is that we've pieced together is looking at who's playing there right now. Right now they have Shane Mertz at left tackle, who's a guy who could potentially start at left tackle later this year. Yeah, Chris likes
Chris
him.
Just pumped his fist. Chris, would you like to explain?
He's from New Jersey with Chris, and those guys are, you know.
I kind of knew Shane Mertz in high school, and he's from around where I grew up, so.
Wait, you kind of knew him? Like you're MySpace friends, or what? No. How does that work?
I just, don't parse my speech.
I'm genuinely interested in what your relationship was.
I just knew him, from high school sports and stuff, and so. I knew him before I came here, so I just kind of root for him on the side.
Well, anyways, he's a guy who I think he could play at right tackle. He could eventually move to left. I think he will eventually move to left tackle. He's a huge guy. Fitz calls him the SS Mertz. And he'll probably be in competition for Jorgensen at right tackle, at least at the beginning of fall camp, but Jorgensen's not there right now. And so right
touchdown scoring Paul Jorgensen.
Yeah, he got a touchdown last year against Illinois, and Fitz was in full FU mode and decided to throw a touchdown pass to his offensive line. That also put Eric Olson starting at right tackle right now, but he's going to be the number four tackle behind Konopka, Jorgensen, and Mertz. And then at guard, I mean, you don't have Frazier in there right now, so it's Jeff Mogus who he's starting at left guard right now, and that he looks like a prime candidate to take over there. And then at right guard, right now you have Frazier in there, and then Adam DiPietro, who was a 4-star recruit in high school. He redshirted last year, but he'll be in the mix. So I think right now, and then at center you have Ian Park behind Rando Itaple. The Itaple is pretty much established, but it's good for Park. You know, there's no pressure to step in really quick. So the point is, I think this offensive line is a lot of new faces, but they're actually really talented players. Like, it always takes time to adjust, and it might be like me.
Mertz at 6'8". I mean, that's definitely that's big league size. Yeah,
exactly. And so you got a lot of guys who are going to be stepping in who are, I mean, they're sort of inexperienced game wise, but a lot of these guys do have experience as non-starters. And I think it'll be a lot like last year where it might take some time to get it settled in. They'll move some things around. But eventually, you're going to be looking at Kanapka at obviously one of the tackle spots. And Mirth and Jorgensen can both split time, both very capable of playing really on either side. And then at guard, Mogus looked good at times last year, and he's probably got a spot there. Frazier looked good. He's been hurt. But even without him, DiPietro obviously is really talented, a four-star recruit. He was Northwestern's right. second highest recruit last year. And then at center, you got Mirabli. Right. It's looking good, but there's a lot of moving pieces.
I wonder, you know, the run game at Northwestern has looked very different. I mean, depending on which back you had, you know, going back to like Jason Wright and Noah Heron. I mean, then you've got like a, you know, more of a scat back like Tyrell Sutton. I'm really curious to see what kind of identity this run game is going to have this year, given that you lose three huge members up front. You've got such a talented group of guys coming behind, but I don't think we're going to really see what that identity is until maybe Evan Kenosha. I mean, for all we know.
The thing is, the run game, they're still going to have a lot of outside runs. They're going to be focused on that, and it's going to be, and they'll still run it up the middle. But when you have, when you run the read option, it takes away a little bit of the importance of the offensive line. The offensive line is still very important. It's kill me if you hear that, you say that. But I think that this one thing is the offensive line can have a little more of a learning curve, especially since they are talented guys. They're going to settle in there. I think the run game will look a lot like last year. But, again, then we'll have to see. But, Chris, I mean, defensive-wise, you got anything? Or?
Yeah. A couple things about the defense I've been impressed with this year. First of all, if you guys remember last year, I think Ibrahim Campbell was the only returning starter last year. And I think combined there was 1 year of returning starters experience. And the secondary, I think it finished last in the Big Ten in terms of, like, yards per game allowed. But if you look at yards per play, I think they were about, like, middle of the pack. And I think that's a more relevant statistic. So, basically, I think they were better last year. And they were young. Now, they do lose Quinn Evans, the transfer from Stanford. So, you're going to have some uncertainty at the cornerback spot. One side is pretty locked up, as far as I can tell. Nick Van Hoos, he's not participating in spring practice, but he's got that side locked up pretty much. The other side is kind of up in the air right now. Daniel Jones has been taking first team snaps, but one guy who's really been playing well is Dwight White. He's a redshirt freshman. He's strong, athletic, really good. And then, another guy who he's a true freshman. But he's not out here during spring practice, but I think he could play as early as this year is Keith Watkins. He played running back in high school, but he looks really good on tape, and I've heard good things about him. In terms of the linebackers, again, there's another guy who's missing who's a key piece is Damian Proby, so he's not participating. Some of the guys who are stepping in and looking really good are Colin Ellis, Drew Smith, and also Joseph Jones. He is a redshirt freshman, I believe. I think he was recruited as a safety. He's added some weight, and he's playing on the outside. I think he's playing weak side linebacker. He's looked really, really good, too.
Him and Smith are just outstanding athletically. I mean, what we've seen from them, they had some big hits and made some great plays.
Yeah. You saw Smith got a lot of playing time last year, too. I remember specifically against Syracuse, he played a great game, the first game of the year. The defensive line, I guess the wild card, everyone wants to see what Ifeadi Adenabo can do.
Is that the correct pronunciation, Kevin?
Yes.
Kevin's our resident, is it Nigerian? Is that does he have Nigerian descent?
No.
Ifeadi Adenabo?
Well, he does, but like, why do I have anything to do with
because it? Because you're the African name expert here. Last time you corrected me on my pronunciation.
Well, no. I think the controversy last time was over Godwin Igwebuke.
Oh yeah, and
no.
Someone at Northwestern how to pronounce Godwin's name, and they told me they don't know. So, and this is someone like in the athletic department. So, you know, if we don't know, that's okay because they don't even know yet. So they guess Igwebuke, I think so.
Yeah, but anyway, on the defensive line, if you look at the end spot, I think Deontay Gibson showed some real flashes last year, so he's going to be a mainstay. Dean Lowry also was one of the true freshmen who played last year, and he looked really good. And then you have Ifeadi, however we're going with this.
Resident linguist.
My one biggest concern with this defense, and I think it's kind of going underplayed, is that Brian Arnfeldt graduated last year. He was really, really good the entire year. He kind of anchored the defensive tackle spot, and they're going to have trouble replacing him. I know there's some guys coming up like Chance Carter, who has played well, and Sean McAvilly has looked good, and same with Will Hampton. But I think that's a big loss, and they're going to have to find some guys to fill his void. But, you know, other than that, I've been pretty impressed so far with what I've seen from the defense.
All right, guys, rundown time. Here we're going to start off with Luke, our freshman contributor here. Luke's going to give us his rundown.
All right, so with two games left in the Big Ten basketball schedule, it's really anyone's guess how it'll turn out. Nebraska's tied with Northwestern, Minnesota's tied with Illinois, and numbers 2-5 are completely deadlocked right now. But let's just look at a certain scenario to see how Northwestern will fit into the Big Ten tournament. So if everything goes how it presumably should, Northwestern will beat Penn State and lose at Michigan State. Now, it's definitely not a guarantee that they'll beat Penn State because, I mean, Penn State went and beat Michigan, although they did play awful in their next game. But the Nittany Lions don't have a true road win all season, so Northwestern has a bit of an advantage here. Then, if Nebraska, who is tied with them right now but has the advantage with the tiebreaker since they beat Northwestern, if they lose their final two against Minnesota and Iowa, that gives the Wildcats the number 10 seed, meaning they would play the number 7 seed. So who's going to be the number 7 seed? So if you're going to put money on it, you should probably choose Iowa. They have a home matchup with Illinois, which gives them a great opportunity to fall into a tie with the Illini. So given that Iowa takes down Nebraska and Illinois loses at Ohio State, then the Hawkeyes will leapfrog the Illini. Minnesota's final two games don't look too daunting, so you can probably pencil in Iowa at the 7 seed, and that's who I believe Northwestern will end up.
So you're assuming an Illini loss in Columbus. Interesting. Okay. Illinois has had Ohio State's number as of late, so yeah, we'll be interested from the Illini Nation perspective to see what happens.
All right, Kevin, is Brandon Paul going to drop like 50 points or whatever?
He never know. At 50, it's 0-50. I mean, really, that's the range.
Zero or 50,
exactly.
But no, I actually did the same thing as Luke earlier today. I was like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen, and I got Northwestern versus Iowa too, which is interesting because the women are playing Iowa
right.
In the tournament. My rundown, I have two things, but one of them will only take a sec. First is I want to shout out to my man Seth Bernstein, who is the biggest Northwestern fan ever. If you see him, he has a sign that says deposit. I think it's from like a bank promotion or something like 3 years ago, but he loves
Northwestern. Yeah, what's the story? I keep meaning to ask
him
about that.
He just loves Northwestern a lot.
But deposit?
Where yeah, it's like from a BMO Harris Bank thing or something. I don't know. He just kept it. But then he made a bunch of new signs. He like made his own. Anyways, there's going to be a big head of him in the student section, which is awesome.
He won the contest.
Well, he was one of three winners. And so there's going to be a big head of him in the student section, which is awesome because Seth's the man. Second, I want to talk about officiating because, I mean, it's just been a problem all year with officiating college basketball. I mean, there was the thing with Iowa State, Kansas, which that was a BS call against Iowa State at the end there. But mainly in the Big Ten, like, I just don't understand how you can have the best basketball in the country and just not care how terrible your officials are. Like, watching the Indiana-Iowa game, it was bad. And then, again, at Michigan State, Michigan, it was terrible. Like,
These are close games, too. These are not games that are out of hand where, you know, you can afford to miss a few calls.
Exactly. And, from the officiating in Iowa, Indiana, at first I was like, wow, they're not calling anything. Because people, like, Iowa was, like, mugging Zeller. And then at the end, Zeller could do, like, if they breathe on Zeller, it's like, foul. You have to be consistent. And the problem is, like, these guys are, like, infamous. Like, everyone knows who TV Teddy is, Teddy Valentine. And for a bad thing, because he, like, goes crazy and he makes it about him. That's not what college basketball is supposed to be about. It's terrible. And Ed Hightower is just clueless. I mean, he's a superintendent in his spare time. Why is he a ref? Like, why is that allowed? I feel like the Big Ten needs to get full-time refs. And, you know, maybe Ed Hightower could be a good ref if he focused on that full-time. But it's just, it's embarrassing how much of a joke Big Ten refs are. And I don't understand why the comments, I know they're proud and whatever, and they don't want to, like, admit some mistakes, but you got to make some changes, at least maybe behind the scenes, because it's just too much when your refs can't get a charge call right that everyone else can see. And also one thing, Illinois' biggest play of the year that they're, like, promoing is Brandon Paul's dunk over Trevor Mbakwe. They called that a charge
yeah.
And count of the basket.
because they said the ball was in the hoop, which is physically impossible when you're dunking the ball. And they show a picture, and he's just
not like, if you're Brandon Paul.
He's like terrorizing Mbakwe, like the still shot of the Illinois like comboing. And like clearly he's charging him right then, and the ball's still way up in the air. It's just, I don't know, it's ridiculous. I'm sorry, that's my rant for today.
Chris,
it was certainly a rant.
Sorry.
So I think Luke kind of touched on it, but the Big Ten has four teams tied for second place. Indiana is in first place by a full two games, and you have Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, and Wisconsin all in second. And I just wanted to talk about how interesting this final week of the Big Ten season could be. You have Indiana plays Ohio State at home tomorrow night, and then they finish off the year at Michigan, which is just going to be a huge game. And then you have Michigan State has to play at Wisconsin. And one of the most shocking results of the weekend was Purdue winning at Wisconsin. Like,
unbelievable.
Yeah, that was crazy. So I'm just interested to see how this plays out. And I think Indiana has already secured a share of the Big Ten championship, but they might be able to win it outright. We'll see what happens. I think didn't it finish last year with three teams all got a share of the Big Ten title?
Michigan State, Michigan, and Ohio State.
Yeah, right. So, it's just going to be interesting to see how that plays out this year.
Okay, guys, cleanup hitter coming up here. I want to talk about the women's team. I had a really good time, as you guys know, calling that game alongside Ben Gordon, who, by the way, lives two blocks from me, which is bizarre. But anyways, pleasure reacquainting myself with him. And
former UConn great Ben Gordon.
G-O-R-E-N, actually, is how I pronounce. But yes, yeah. What an incredibly scrappy game. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, you talk about officiating. What happened was the refs almost got into a hole in that game. Northwestern, of course, lost by, I think it was 15 by the end. But early on, they were letting them play, and there were bodies hitting the ground. We had Kate Popovic injuring her knee on her senior day. That was sad to see her hobble off. But anyway, so yeah, crazy situation. I mean, Northwestern goes into Iowa City, beats the Hawkeyes on their home court while they were trying to climb back into the rankings. Then Iowa comes in, pounds Northwestern in the last couple minutes of the first half. And now, not only that, after all this clawing and scratching and rough play, now they're facing each other in the first round of the Big Ten tournament. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that pans out, if for nothing else, for the dramatic aspect of it. Guys?
And one thing about the women's team, Maggie Lyon, who was like the freshman of the week like 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah,
like
3 weeks.
She wasn't freshman of the week this week.
No.
She was freshman of the year.
She was.
Which is the first time ever for Northwestern women's basketball. So congratulations to her. I mean, they've been pretty bad for a while, but she's really good.
Yeah.
Douglas is really good. I mean, McEwen's got some good talent.
Got some, yeah.
And I will recommend one of our women's basketball writer, Callie Counselor, wrote a feature on Maggie Lyon. That's really good. So I recommend you all check that out on the site.
Yeah. Obviously, a great shooter from the outside. I think she's really done a nice job of adjusting to the college game. Obviously, in high school, she was a very high volume scorer. She was the, of course, focal point of that offense. Now, even when she's playing alongside, you know, a Hackney or a Diamant, I think she's done a really nice job of making sure that she's playing within that offense. And I think it's a really good fit for her. I think that, you know, Coach McEwen's offense enables people to kind of make action through the wing and then pull up for jumpers. Big honor for her. I think the key for her now is just making sure she improves on this. Because, you know, we've seen a lot of people who have won these types of awards. Like, people forget that Kirk Heinrich was first-team All-Rookie. You know, there's people like DJ Richardson, of course, shared the honor with Drew Crawford back in their freshman season. I mean, look at how their two careers have gone in different trajectories. So, yeah, it'd be really interesting to see. You know, I've all the confidence in the world of Maggie Lyon. She's a hard worker, got great size, really, really high-level touch from the outside. So big, big shout-out to her and to Coach McEwen as he builds that program. Guys, fourth podcast in the books. We were missing Jonah today, but we were a pleasure to have Luke alongside us. Tune in next week. We'll have more.